Ani, and welcome to Bomsida, an Aboriginal news magazine program that features news, current affairs, a focus on community and culture, spotlights on entertainment and great tunes, and every flavor from Aboriginal artists. I'm your host, Jennifer Ashwasagay. Hearings for the Commission of Inquiry into Missing Women in BC are about to get underway, and Native Women's Association of Canada is eager to present if legal fees are provided at the 11th hour. In Ontario, Kitchenamakusibininawag has issued an eviction notice to a mine exploration company, and Webequay First Nation has signed an MOU with Indy Incorporated, and a new Aboriginal Theological School is in the works from the United Church of Canada. Plus, Aboriginal entrepreneurs can get helpful tips and network at a national conference at the end of this month. All these stories, plus great tunes, all coming your way right after the news. Here's your national Aboriginal news. Mi'kmaq and Nova Scotia are getting close to forming their own government within the province. According to CTV, the Mi'kmaq government would also include a House of Assembly and would be the first of its kind in Canada. Acadia First Nation Chief Deborah Robinson says they still have a lot of work to do.
At this stage, we are still in the process of consulting with our own community and community members.
The government project has been in the work over the past 5 years, and Robinson says she can't say when it will be in place because of the extensive community consultation that is currently underway. The Mi'kmaq are also possibly seeking a place in Halifax to house the assembly. Native Women's Association of Canada still wants in on the OPAL inquiry if they get funding. NWAC pulled out of the Missing Women Commission of Inquiry after they learned the organization would not have their legal expenses funded by the commission. Many other women's groups that, like NWAC, were granted standing at the inquiry but not funded to enable them to hire lawyers for research and cross-examining police and RCMP. Those groups have also pulled out of the inquiry. Jeanette Corbière-Laval, president of NWAC, says the commission would benefit hearing from NWAC.
We, as the Native Women's Association of Canada, are not represented at this commission. There's going to be a big lack within their commission, because we have that expertise and all that experience, on missing, murdered women right across Canada. And the other argument that we had is that it is our rights, our human rights, as Aboriginal women, as an Aboriginal women's organization, that our voices should be heard at this commission. And if we're not given the resources, then it's obviously discriminatory, and we do not have that recognition of our right to have a voice at this level.
Formal hearings for the Missing Women Commission of Inquiry BC begins October 11th in Vancouver. Corbière-Laval adds NWAC will also continue to push for a national inquiry into missing and murdered Aboriginal women. Meanwhile, groups across the country held vigils for missing and murdered Aboriginal women on October 4th, which is part of the Sisters in Spirit campaign and an initiative of NWAC. Kitchenamakusibininawag has issued an eviction notice to a mining exploration company. The company has staked claims in the community's traditional territory on sacred sites, including a burial grounds. KI spokesperson John Cutfeet says the province shouldn't have issued a permit.
We were at the point where we were saying Ontario had gone on ahead and issued out another permit to begin a exploration program without first reconciling KI's interests with other competing interests, as directed by the Court of Appeals in May 2008, when the KI 6 were released from incarceration. So we went and posted a notice of eviction on God's Lake Resources, and that they were not to go into the territory without KI's knowledge or consent.
Cutfeet says KI has not yet completed its community land use plan as required by the Far North Act. Because of the large geographical area, Cutfeet says about 5 years is needed to complete the land use plan, which will include sacred and burial site identification. The mining exploration company, God's Lake Resources, told CBC it would give KI until winter to complete a land use plan and prove there are burial sites in the area, and by winter, the company would resume working its claim. claim. The Ministry of Northern Development, Mines and Forestry will only say that it has accepted an invitation to meet with members of KI. The community is also calling on the province to create a joint panel to resolve longstanding issues regarding mining exploration on their homelands. An education rally has been held at the Human Rights Monument in Ottawa. The October 6th rally was hosted by Kitigan-Zibi Anishinaabeg. The rally was to bring awareness to the funding crisis faced by First Nations education. In a statement, Chief Gilbert Whitedoug says the rally was to bring attention to the national panel, which was established by the federal government as another delay strategy to not take the most obvious of actions in regards to First Nation education. Air Canada has been embroiled in a public relations storm. The company has apologized for a hotel safety memo. That memo has been called racist by Derek Nepinek, Grand Chief of the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs. The Canadian Press reports the internal bulletin said employees will be staying at a hotel closer to the airport because of security concerns downtown. And the bulletin noted that about 1,000 displaced people from rural Manitoba are staying in hotels in Winnipeg's core. A company spokesperson told media that it appears certain inferences are being drawn from the contents of a recent internal bulletin relating to accommodation for flight crews on overnight layover in Winnipeg. Meanwhile, many of the displaced people are from First Nations that were flooded last spring. Grand Chief Nepinek says Air Canada was racist to link an increased security risk to displaced Aboriginal families, and he has asked for a retraction. The information and communications sector in New Brunswick has been given a boost. The province has injected $4.1 million for a training for employment program for Aboriginal people in the province. Under the three-year New Brunswick Aboriginal Information and Communications Technology Project, about 150 Aboriginal people are to be recruited to participate in the project. Assembly of First Nations National Chief Sean Atleo applauds the federal government's plan to create a national suicide prevention strategy. The National Chief told media the motion put forward by the House of Commons this week is especially important to First Nations because suicide rates are 5 to 7 times higher than the national average. In Ontario, Webequay First Nation and Indie Indigenous Development Inc. have entered into a memorandum of understanding. Indie President Jason Wilson says the company is happy to work with the community in the Ring of Fire area.
As you know, they're very highly sought after community over the potential of their land development, which is near mining. So we bring the essential service and partnership and to help them build capacity in the area of communications, preferably remote communications, security and safety, which is basically due diligence that it is required to do. So it's another piece of the pie that we can help to bring First Nations on board as equal partners and go after when those project RFPs come up.
In a statement, Webequay First Nation Chief Cornelius Waba says the community looks forward to contractual opportunities with the main operators in the Ring of Fire. Nunavik is looking at ways to keep offenders out of court. Natsiak Online reports the Nunavik is a little closer to implementing alternative justice measures for young and first-time offenders. The Katavik Regional Development is helping to draft a protocol to allow Nunavik's justice committees to decide how the Youth Criminal Justice Act will be applied in some cases. That means some cases will fall into the hands of the communities rather than the criminal justice system. There are already similar programs in the region for adult cases. A gang expert says Saskatchewan needs to take action to prevent young people from joining gangs. Mark Totten is a sociology professor at Carleton University and has written extensively on the subject, and CC reports he is currently studying gangs in the prairies. He says gang issues shouldn't be viewed as race-related but spring from poverty, dysfunctional families, and the effects of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. Totten says those problems are known and there are ways to address them. A new Aboriginal theological school is in the works. Maggie McLeod is the executive minister of the Aboriginal Ministry Circle with the United Church of Canada. McLeod says the new school will see two schools merged together. She says the new school is being created because of so much change in the Aboriginal community.
You know, our communities are changing rapidly. Our First Nation communities are changing rapidly. We know that within our communities we have a mix of Christianity and all of the different variables or denominations, you know, within that, and as well as within our community is the reclaiming of our traditional and spiritual values. So it's a different time, different context, and So it was an opportunity to kind of rethink and reimagine what it's like in this time to prepare spiritual leadership in the context of the Christian Church of the United Church of Canada. So it was a kind of a reframing, holding on to the original vision of the centers, but kind of reframing as we move forward for the next couple of decades.
The new school will be located in Beauséjour, Manitoba. Aboriginal entrepreneurs will be able to get tips for staying power in an ever-changing economic landscape. The Canadian Council for Aboriginal Business, or CCAB, is hosting an Aboriginal Entrepreneurs Conference and Trade Show. Clint Davis is the president of CCAB, and he gives us a sneak peek at the two-day agenda.
On the first day, we're going to be highlighting and learning more about the significant opportunities anywhere from potash development in Saskatchewan to development of the Lower Churchill Hydro Project in Labrador. And then the next day, we're going to be focusing primarily on what sort of skills and expertise would Aboriginal business need to ensure a level of success, anywhere from how do you achieve successful impact benefit agreements to 100 tips for entrepreneurs.
The Aboriginal Entrepreneurs Conference and Trade Show is being held in Ottawa October 24th and 25th. And that's your National Aboriginal News.
But the soul, a place we fill with the midnight sun, on the side of the moon, just over the horizon, with the wine in our song, where I wanna belong, where I wanna be here, we were born for this, with the wine in our song, where I wanna belong, sip a place of rest. We were born for this, yeah. Can I always know the future's so unknown, but it's never too late to do what's right. It's alright to cry, but this is your enough. Can I always be strong and know it's not wrong. We all wanna belong, we all wanna be kissed, we were born for this. With the wine in our song, we all wanna belong, to the place of rest, we were born for this, yeah.
That was The Highway from Digawolf. Hearings for the Commission of Inquiry into Missing Women in BC are about to get underway, and Native Women's Association of Canada is eager to present if last-minute legal fees can be provided. The organization, along with several other organizations, were granted standing at the inquiry, which is looking into the police investigations of serial killer Robert Picken, along with their handling of reports of missing women from Vancouver's downtown east side. However, the commission didn't fund legal fees for most of the organizations withstanding, only for the families of the murdered women. And that decision has made many bristle and caused many groups to pull out of the inquiry, including NWAC. But President Jeanette Corbière-Laval says they petitioned the Attorney General with the support of Commissioner Wally Opal for funding, and now they have also called on the United Nations for help.
So we had to make the really difficult decision to withdraw, and several other of the major groups and organizations also had to withdraw. And this was in summer, I believe this was in July, we had to do that. The Commission of Inquiry is scheduled to begin next week, October the 11th. And I've been advised that of the 22 recognized groups and organizations, you know, who were granted standing, you know, to be part of this commission, 21 of the 22 drafted a letter to the Premier of BC and said, unless many of those organizations that were granted standing, including us as the Native Women's Association of Canada, unless we were given the resources, the funds to be able to come up with good presentations, do the research, you know, so that the police and the other security officials who were involved, so that they can be questioned. We needed those funds to make a good presentation and to question them, that this commission would not have that the integrity of reaching, you know, all the aspects that it should. So this is why we were part of that letter that was sent to the Premier of BC. And we're still waiting. But in the meantime, you know, that was one aspect. That we all came together and we said this is not appropriate, it's not acceptable, because on one hand, all the government officials, all the policing agencies, the RCMP, downtown Vancouver police and justice officials, they were all had the resources and the funds to be able to provide, their background and their presentation, but all the rest of us were not going to be able to. So in the meantime, prior to this, and this is what we were talking about, we had to look at what other ways could we approach, you know, what can we do? Because it is important, you know, that we have the voices and the experience of our own women, you know, present at this commission to make this commission credible so that they can come up with good recommendations that will be useful, you know, as we move forward. So we decided to approach at the international level. And this is where we approached the three rapporteurs at the international level to get their assistance so that they will intercede, you know, to the government of British Columbia and to the federal government of Canada, that there seems that it is the perception that there is an obvious discrimination here, because it is the women's organizations, the women's council, you know, who are not getting the resources to be able to be heard. So that was our argument, and I believe that they will be following through on this. So that's where we are right now, and we're just waiting to see what the outcome will be. We're still waiting for the Premier of British Columbia to deal with that letter. And I believe that the three rapporteurs, the special rapporteurs at the international level, will also be following up with their intercession on our part.
Well, the clock is certainly ticking right now, and if something were to happen, like funding granted or whatever, so how fast would you be able to get in there?
Well, this is the difficulty, obviously, but we feel, you know, with the experience of our council, you know, that we have been working with all along, And they've been doing this pro bono too, you know, just, you know, doing that, the assistance to us as a Native Women's Association. That once we were given the recognition and the assurance that yes, you'd be able to receive the funds, and you know if you would get started, I believe we can do it. We would be prepared to get started right away, because if we as the Native Women's Association of Canada are not represented at this commission, there's going to be a big lack, you know, within their commission, because we have that expertise, and you know, of all that experience, you know, on missing, murdered women right across Canada. And the other argument that we had is that it is our rights, our human rights as Aboriginal women, as an Aboriginal women's organization, that our voices should be heard at this commission. And if we're not given the resources, then it's obviously discriminatory, and we do not have that recognition of our rights, you know, to have a voice at this level.
That was Jeanette Corbière-Laval, president of the Native Women's Association of Canada. Kitchinemeku Sibininawag has issued an eviction notice to mining exploration company God's Lake Resources. Community spokesperson John Cutbeat says the issues are many.
Last Friday, we four of our hunters were out hunting in the Sherman Lake area, which is about 120 kilometers northwest of the community. And they came upon a campsite that they had two tents, and they could hear people working out in the woods, and they came back and told the community, saying that there are people working out there. Now, one of the things that we had expected was that after what the community had gone through in May 2008 with the incarceration of the Carrie Six, that there would be a different way of dealing with these type of situations, because as it turned out, it was a company called God's Lake Resources embarking on an exploration program without the knowledge and without the consent of Kitchinemeku Sibininawag. And so we went there last Wednesday. I believe that would have been on the 28th of September, to go and talk with these people and ask them to leave right away, because they were in fact trespassing on KI spiritual and sacred land. We have burial sites within the vicinity of the old Sherman Lake mine site, and one of them, which is a short 20-minute walk from the actual mine shaft. And when we got there, it looked like whoever was there had broken camp. When we landed, we saw a shed right by the dock where we landed, and we saw a tent, some camping gear, mattresses, Coleman stoves, and other, among other things. And so we posted the eviction notice that they should be there, because they were there without the consent of KI, and the KI hadn't been properly consulted with this activity that they were embarking on. And we were at the point where we were saying Ontario had gone on ahead and issued out another permit to begin a exploration program without first reconciling KI's interests with other competing interests, as directed by the Court of Appeals in May 2008, when the KI-6 were released from incarceration. So we went and posted a notice of eviction on God's Lake Resources, and that they were not to go into the territory without KI's knowledge or consent.
Well, I have a whole bunch of questions by just listening to you. John, what did the company rep say anything to you, or like when you contacted them, and how did you find out that it was God's Lake Resources?
What what I'm hearing is that the company had been talking with an individual member. That's what I've gathered so far. And but there is a consultation process in place put forth by the community, and that this type of consultation, which I'll loosely call consultation, is the same thing that happened the last time when February 2006 Plotnix came into the they spoke to an individual members of a family without going through the identified process that was put forth by the community. And so we're now once again at a point where we are facing a similar situation that took place in February 2006, which resulted in the incarceration of the KI-6 leadership from the community.
And I know you just put out your consultation protocol or what the community wants, as well as your water declaration. It has been well publicized.
Yes, it has been well publicized. And, of course, Ontario has not responded. Neither has Gazeg Resources. And that there is a process that any type of proposal has to go through for the benefit of community members who pass the documents at random. And at this point, nobody has entered into those processes that have been outlined by the community.
You did try and contact God's Lake Resources and the province regarding this this issue that just happened?
Well, we've been actually trying to let them know that KI has a process in place. And that, like you said, it's been well publicized. It's been out since July 5. And nobody seems to pay attention to the fact that KI had set a process in place, and that God's Lake choose to go ahead and do what it wants without really talking to the community to even begin finding out where those sacred burial sites are, what is the spiritual site that we're referring to. And and of course they just went ahead and started doing what they wanted to do out on the land. When we were out there, there was a burial site just about that short 20 minute walk from the actual mine shaft. And of course I guess it must be okay for them to go ahead and do what it is that they want to do. Because they obviously have the backing of Ontario, and Ontario had failed to consult and reconcile our interests. And those documents, the consultation protocol and the water declarations, being our interests, which haven't been reconciled.
That was John Cutfeet, spokesperson for Kitchenamikusib and Inuwaq in northwestern Ontario. Here's Farrah Palmer with My Brother.
There'll never be another brother like the one I had. He must have been an angel. He was more than just a man. His laughter I will miss, his smile and his kiss. My heart is crying out for you, Gabriel, we miss you. I feel so blessed that God chose me to be your family. And I was told the good die young, but I just can't believe I'll never see your face or feel your warm embrace. My heart is crying out for you, Gabriel, I miss you. But we'll remember the way you were and all the things you did. And we'll remember the unconditional love you had to give. And how you loved your mother and father, your sisters and your brothers, your family and friends, until the very end. There will never be another Gabriel, my brother.
Webequay First Nation and Indian Indigenous Development Inc. have entered into a memorandum of understanding. Now here's Indy President Jason Wilson, who will tell us all about that.
We've been relationship building with the community, not only to consider them partners, but also friends, being First Nation myself. So Indy Inc., or Indigenous Development, it's a collaboration between Webequay First Nation to bring them essential services for their project areas to come. As you know, they're very highly sought after community over the potential of their land development, which is in the area of mining. So we bring the essential service and partnership and to help them build capacity in the area of communications, preferably remote communications, security and safety, which is basically due diligence that it is required to do. So it's another piece of the pie that we can help to bring First Nations on board as equal partners and go after when those project RFPs come up.
So what does that mean exactly?
That we established a MOU, or a revenue sharing agreement, if you will, that we will always jointly work together, always be communicating on the opportunities that will come about in the area. Of course, the Ring of Fire, it's touted as having the largest mineral potential in the world. Usually we were always paid to be on the sidelines of deals, but in this regard, we want to be together chasing after the deals and to make sure they're done in a respectful way, and that Aboriginal procurement, hiring, and ownership of the project is in the best interest of the community.
And so are you planning on signing any other MOUs with other communities or commercial clients?
Our primary outreach, of course, is project-based, which is in the mining or construction, oil and gas, and other land development potential. But in this regard, this unique business structure or model that we have is, as you see, I'm First Nations, born-raised from Rainy River First Nation, and as president, I get to showcase that our people are becoming leaders not only in our communities but also in mainstream society, heading up industry companies and leading them, advising them that they do things in a more inclusive, respectful manner. So primarily, it's a national scope that we're going after. And to be inclusive, we literally have a plan in place to outreach, engage, and try and pull First Nation as partners first, and so that we don't miss that. It's just another piece of the pie that our people can have access to, because industry isn't in the business of giving away money. You have to identify it, and you have to lobby, and you have to structure it so that it's in your deal. So we figure that we're just smart business to do it early with the community, mm-hmm. and work with them and build good business from the ground up.
So does that mean that you can help provide equity for any of the projects?
Because we're a startup, I come from a firm that has 17 years experience in the security. The remote communications is a trademark system that we've owned and created, and the safety is mostly the due diligence to make sure the site is safe. What we want to do with the First Nations is build that capacity early, and really it comes about equity. Yes, we have visions of becoming a $100 million company in 5 years. It's always good to be ambitious, but you got to build these ambitions one deal at a time. So since we've rebranded and have a First Nations person in place that knows how to do the protocols and the respect and outreach to communities, we found out in the last 4 to 6 months our brand has really been well received by our people. And, you know, like you've seen in the picture, two First Nations sign a deal. To me, that's the way of the future. Not only are we just partners and stewards, but we have to see ourselves as owners of the deal flow and owners of the development that occurs, because we've always been keepers of the land, and we have to be careful. Like, we're going to have to make hard decisions whether we go down these deal flows or not. So safety, security, and communication, we feel, is just paramount to ensuring that the deal flow is done correctly. So equity, yes, in the future. we'd love to be able to bankroll, and we're working on that right now with a strong investors relations strategy with our partners, and of course we're seeking out overhead support, but at the same time we can grow organically with the First Nations as well. So we're considering all options, of course.
That was Jason Wilson, president of Indie Indigenous Development, Inc. The United Church of Canada will be merging two of its Aboriginal theological schools into one to address changing times and head into the future. Maggie McLeod is the executive minister of the Aboriginal Ministry Circle with the United Church of Canada.
It was through the work of the General Council and its executive last year, and taking a look at the theological schools throughout Canada. Part of the work was an invitation for the two schools, the two existing Aboriginal theological schools, that is the Francis Sandy Center in Ontario and the Dr. Jesse Soto Center in Manitoba, to begin to engage in a conversation around coming together, merging the resources together to look at a new school in the context of this time and place. So the two schools were originally created in 1984. The Dr. Jesse Soto Resource Center and the Francis Sandy Center was established in 1987. So many things have changed since that time, and our communities are changing rapidly. Our First Nation communities are changing rapidly. We know that within our communities we have a mix of Christianity and all of the different variables or denominations, within that, and as well as within our community is the reclaiming of our traditional and spiritual values. So it's a different time, different context, and so it was an opportunity to kind of rethink and reimagine what it's like in this time to prepare the spiritual leadership in the context of the Christian Church of the United Church of Canada. So it was kind of a reframing, holding on to the original vision of the centers, but kind of reframing as we move forward for the next couple of decades.
Like an evolution. And so are there many people or Aboriginal people interested in a theological school?
Well, across the church right now, I'd have to say that we don't, there is a decline in ministry leadership, or those seeking, to prepare themselves for ministry leadership. And again, I think that's the changing landscape of the church. We do know that we do have 53 United Church Aboriginal congregations across Canada, and in some of those cases there are local folks who are interested in offering lay leadership. They have named some barriers in terms of being able to leave their community for extended periods of time to serve or to prepare themselves for ministry in the United Church. So the center will look at creative ways of perhaps, nurturing or accompanying people who are in community and interested in offering some lay leadership within their community. The new school will also offer, opportunity for ordained and commissioned ministry as well. But in answer to your question, I'd have to say that right across the church, Aboriginal, non-Aboriginal, there is a decline in those willing to come forward to serve in that capacity.
The school will be based in Winnipeg, or rather Manitoba?
The new theological school, the name is the Sandy Soto Spiritual Center, that is a combination of the two theological schools, will be located in Beausejour, which is, I believe it's about 50 kilometers or so west, east of Winnipeg. So that is the site of the what was the Dr. Jesse Resource Center.
Oh, and by the way, when we're talking about declining interest in both the Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal community, would you happen to know why that is, or have any theories about that?
Well, I think it's common knowledge that there is a change in our church in the 21st century. So, I mean, it's a time, it's an interesting time within the church to, you know, for us to kind of step back and see what is the church going to look like, you know, in the next 10 to 15 years. Certainly is a change, and there are a number of reasons why that I couldn't go into here at the interview, but a change in society, a change in just a general change in society, and different ways that we're engaging in the world, I guess, as a whole. Families don't often go to church together as they used to. There are other interests, and there are other ways in which people are seeking their spiritual nurture today.
That was Maggie McLeod, Executive Minister of the Aboriginal Ministry Circle with the United Church of Canada. Now here's Wayne LaValle with All My Relations. Aboriginal entrepreneurs will be able to get tips for staying power in an ever-changing economic landscape. The Canadian Council for Aboriginal Business, or CCAB, is hosting an Aboriginal Entrepreneurs Conference and Trade Show coming up at the end of the month. Clint Davis is the president of CCAB.
It's an event that the CCAB is hosting over the course of 2 days at the end of October. We're co-hosting this event with Mr. John Duncan, who's the Minister of Aboriginal Affairs and Northern Development. And the purpose of this event essentially is to really celebrate business and to highlight some incredible opportunities facing Aboriginal community-owned businesses and Aboriginal entrepreneurs across Canada. On the first day, we're going to be highlighting and learning more about the significant opportunities anywhere from potash development in Saskatchewan to development of the Lower Churchill Hydro Project in Labrador. And on the next day, we're going to be focusing primarily on what sort of skills and expertise would Aboriginal business need to ensure a level of success, anywhere from how do you achieve successful impact benefit agreements to 100 tips for entrepreneurs.
Well, that sounds interesting. And you were mentioning some of the opportunities. And what are more of the opportunities across Canada for the entrepreneurs?
Well, the fascinating thing is that when you look at some of the mega projects that Canada will be experiencing and toward its drive to be seen as an energy superpower in Canada, anywhere from the development of the oil sands, to potash development, as I mentioned earlier, to the Ring of Fire, which is a major mineral deposit happening in northern Ontario. All of these major projects, which have tremendous support by all levels of government, have a major First Nations, Inuit, Métis component, and so Aboriginal people and Aboriginal businesses must have an opportunity to participate in this kind of activity. So it's quite significant.
And do you think everybody's ready to participate in those projects, or do they still need some more expertise or need to pull up their bootstraps in some areas?
Well, they certainly need more expertise. There's no doubt. We're not starting from scratch or from zero. There are some communities which have had development corporations now for the last 10 to 15 years, but based upon a report that was put out by TD Economics, which CCAB did support them on, certainly the growth of community-owned businesses have took off over the last 5-10 years as a result of the commodity boom that Canada has experienced. Having said that as well, our startup rate for Aboriginal individual-owned businesses have been quite significant over the last 5 years, growing at a rate 5 times faster than the non-Aboriginal population. And some of these businesses have existed beyond 5 to 10 years, so some of them are becoming mature. So we certainly don't have a blank slate when it comes to business, but yes, there still is a lot of work that has to happen and skills that have to develop in order to ensure that we take advantage of these opportunities.
So is there a trend right now with Aboriginal entrepreneurs in that they fall into mainly one kind of a sector?
It's an excellent question. In fact, when we did our survey, the CCAB survey, Aboriginal Business Survey, with the support of the Government of Canada, we looked at over 1,000 Aboriginal entrepreneurs, and we interviewed 50 CEOs of economic development corporations, which are the community-owned businesses. And the insightful thing that we pulled from it is that Aboriginal business covers the gamut of different industries. And so they certainly can be a little top-heavy, particularly around some businesses that support natural resource development. So anywhere from camp facilities management to drilling to construction and so on. But Aboriginal entrepreneurs cover an array of different businesses, anywhere from IT to executive search to retail to anything else that you can think of. So it is quite exciting, and we're not necessarily focused on two or three major areas.
Well, that's interesting. And so at this conference and trade show, who are the national experts that will be presenting?
Well, some of the experts that we have that will be presenting include hearing from a chief economist, deputy chief economist being Derek Burlington of TD Financial Group. He's going to talk about specifically the growth of the Aboriginal market, the Aboriginal economy. He did the research which said that the Aboriginal market is $24 billion. It's expected to be $24 billion this year, expecting to grow to $32 billion by 2016. Other significant speakers include Keith Martell, who's the chairman and CEO of First Nations Bank of Canada, which has grown leaps and bounds over the last number of years. And he's going to talk about the unlimited potential of Aboriginal business and give his views on what he sees over the next little while. Catherine Swift, who's the chair of the and president and CEO of the Canadian Federation of Independent Business, will give her insight on where she sees the growth of small business, which essentially which is essentially the majority of Aboriginal businesses, anywhere from less than 50 employees. And some other really incredible speakers include Leslie Roberts, who has represents Go Forth Institute, and she has compiled and done some exceptional work by compiling top tips for entrepreneurs for success. And we're also having a great speaker. His name is Kunal Gupta, who is the founder and CEO of Polar Mobile, which is one of the fastest-growing Canadian companies in Canada. They create apps for mobile phones. And so he's going to talk about his success as well as the importance of social media in business.
That was Clint Davis, president of the Canadian Council for Aboriginal Business. And the Aboriginal Entrepreneur Conference and Trade Show is going to be held in Ottawa October 24th and 25th. You've been listening to Bomb Sida with Jennifer Ashwasage. Bomb Sida is an Aboriginal news magazine program which includes current affairs, arts and entertainment, and a cross-genre of music from Aboriginal artists. Bomb Sida means walking together in the Anishinaabe language. Music for the program is courtesy of Burnt Project One. If you have comments or story ideas, visit my website at bombseda.com. That's B-A-M-O-S-E-D-A. And thanks for listening to Bomb Sida.